And the weather today, highs of 18 degrees centigrade, lows of 10 degrees centigrade. It'll be a cloudy, mainly dry morning, but there is the possibility of some patchy rain.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
How is Frodo these days? You never hear of him. Is he just asleep at this time of the morning?
Actually, yeah, Frodo's asleep just by my feet.
Well, see, with faithful friend Frodo.
Yeah, he's sleeping.
Oh, that's important. So share with us, just as indeed Anna Garcia shared with the Facebook friends of your good self, what exactly is National Day that you celebrate in Gibraltar? Is it a case of a way of celebrating the Spanish connection, the not Spanish connection, the British connection? What's it all about?
Definitely not the Spanish connection. It's we celebrate, I think it's over, we've been doing National Day for over 20 years now, and everyone either dresses in red and white or red, white and blue for the Union Jack and red and white for the Gibraltar flag. And it is a day that we celebrate being Gibraltarian and being British. So it's a all-day party. There's a political rally in the morning where we have UK MPs and local MPs who just say how great it is that we're British and how great it is that we're Gibraltarian. Usually we have the annual release of the balloons, which has not taken part this year and will never happen again due to environmental issues. It's not environmentally great to throw 30,000 balloons into the air, end up in our seas. But we had I think it was an air display.
Could you not have had biodegradable balloons? Could you not have had
some? We tried that last year.
Oh, dear.
We tried that last year, but I think it's just best not to
talk
throw
about balloons.
Balloons into the air, because they end up in the water. Yeah. So after much backlash, balloons are gone after almost 20 years, I think, of balloons. And we had an air display this year instead. So, and apart from that, it's literally a day of parties. Mm-hmm. Every single place that you will go to in Gibraltar will have people partying.
And did you party yourself, Gabriella?
Of course. Everyone does, from the young to those even in the elderly care units, those in the hospitals are dressed in red and white. Everyone from your grandmother, great-grandmother, to the one-year-old having a party.
I mean, obviously, but without balloons, tragically. Never mind.
Without balloons.
I mean, are balloons banned? Are there people actually on balloon watch to ensure that...
You can bring your own balloons.
Yeah, it's just the official sort
just
of huge balloons.
Just throw it into the water.
And, obviously not. Quick heads up, of course, October the 1st is Lincolnshire Day, in case you're wondering. Gibraltar can have a day of celebration.
That's like National Day for you guys.
Well, I do think that the People's Republic of Lincoln is probably going to be just a matter of months away, actually. Obviously, those are just the views of the person on Siren FM. Who knows what could actually happen? I'm not sort of advocating it, but it's a thought. Yes, October the 1st, Lincolnshire Day, which is a chance to obviously celebrate all matter of things relating to Lincoln, which actually comes up. Let me see. That'll be back end of next week. Well, there we are. I don't think we're having balloons, and certainly not Chinese lanterns, which are, I think, even worse than balloons, but they haven't been banned as yet. Well, maybe they should be. So what about the Gibraltar Chronicle then, Gabriella? Because a few years ago, obviously, you were with the GBC. Before that, I mean, what sort of cutting material have you been working on that you would like to share with the listener?
Cutting material? I think yesterday's front page was something I wrote, actually, on the dementia strategy for Gibraltar. So setting up a national committee for dementia. We have, I think as of May last year, there were like 370 patients, which doesn't sound like much, but we have to keep in mind that we're a small community. So that was the big thing yesterday. We've also had, I think, our deputy chief minister and leader of the Liberal Democrats address Liberal Democrats in the UK.
That's more than enough. I mean, it's officially, as we come round to 7 minutes past 8 o'clock on a Thursday morning here in Lincoln, England, of course, coming up to 7 minutes past 9 o'clock in Gibraltar, just an hour ahead. But that hour makes all the difference, because, you know, that means that they're just ahead of us in terms of the elusive nature of time. Richard Fitzwilliams has just got back from Rome. He's going to be sharing about his Rome experience from that point of view. Have you ever been to Rome, Gabriella?
No, I haven't. I've never clearly been to Italy.
We need to sort that thing through. We need to go and get you commissioned for a location report there. I mean, you can roll the R's in Roma. Gabriella, Roma. Good work. And after that, Arthur McKenzie will be joining us. Simon Coates will be talking a bit about his fantastic work he's currently doing in the Northeast. And we actually have somebody who you may or may not recall from the Apprentice TV series. Of course, that was with...
Did
you? Well, do you remember Margaret?
There's a lot of contestants.
No, she wasn't a contestant. She was one of the advisors. She was one of the twin spearheads who effectively supported Sir Alan. Yes.
That was before Karen.
It was indeed. I know it's difficult to think that there was a case before Miss Brady, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, yes, Margaret was indeed there, Margaret Mountford, and she'll be sharing something which, again, we need your thoughts on, because apparently something which we need in the United Kingdom, our businesses need, but we've actually been abandoning them. And that thing is the lunch hour. Not the lunch break, not the 10 minutes, not the 5 minutes, not the 11 minutes, but a full lunch hour to step away from your workstation, go out and about, and actually have a full lunch hour. Apparently, if we don't have that lunch hour, productivity drops, and despite the fact in the macho culture, you've got to work, you need that lunch hour. That's what Margaret's going to be sharing with us. I mean, I don't know, do you take a lunch hour in Gibraltar? Is it a case of, don't be silly, we work 24/7?
Depends where you work, to be honest. I've heard of lunch half an hour.
Oh, my word. Oh, Margaret would not be impressed with that, I can say.
I've heard of that. Yeah. I don't think civil servants get a lunch hour because they finish at 3:30. They start at 8, finish at 3:30, not bad, so they don't get lunch hour.
But what they do in that time, presumably phenomenal. I mean, you know, they're concentrated effort on the whole thing. Yes, anyway, let us progress. Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, of course.
That's very good. Because a clear initial thought was advice for young newcomers, newbies. Jessica Ward's come back from Spain, but she did say to be fair, she was working until 2 a.m. this morning, so the likelihood of her actually being in at 8 o'clock, highly remote, even though, of course, she is from the Isle of Man via New Zealand. But... given that I have been assured that we'll be having the return of several other midweek drivettes next week, will you be kind enough to join us next week?
Yeah, of course.
Well, that makes perfect
That's
sense
good.
Then.
Yeah.
And Frodo's stayed. Frodo's been
quiet.
Frodo
will wake up by then.
Well, he could be. I mean, he's just. Maybe he's not actually. Maybe asleep. Maybe he's feigning it. Maybe he's actually in deep concentration and he's actually in a Zen Buddhist or whatever Frodo would consider as being a Zen Buddhist approach. He's kind of transcendentally meditating on the ether and so on. So, you know, that apparent closing of the eyes. It may, you know, you could just attach his mind to an alpha rhythm electroencephalograph and you could find a whole new thing coming together. I just say that because it's 10 minutes past 8. Anyway, life continues. Gabriella will return. Richard Fitzwilliams is up next. That's all you need to know. Them again in Rome, the Eternal City. We could actually go to the fountains there. You can have all sorts of things as we head from Gibraltar and Gabriella Peralta to Richard from Rome back in London. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. Yes, it's a fantastic, a cornucopia of culture, I have to say. Really unbelievable. If you have Rome in beautiful weather, and also you have the opportunity to spend several days seeing some of the top sites. I mean, it really does show you that amazing history dating back hundreds of years, and rather excitingly, there's a new excavation in the Roman Forum. So I spent a lot of time there.
Well, exactly, the Palazzo Borghese Palazzo Doria Pamphili, so to speak.
The Borghese Palazzo, that is a recently renovated top palace, of course, linked to the famous family. Mm. And that is, well, it's certainly impressive. I have to say the problem I had with it is that everywhere you look there is something that you see as a result. It's almost as though you were visually attacked. There are no spaces. Britain has been described sometimes as the land without Baroque, and the Palazzo Borghese certainly is an eye-opener. But they have two extraordinary statues, a statue of Napoleon's sister, half-naked, which by Canova, beautiful but very unusual, and also the sleeping hermaphrodite, another famous sculptor, and huge and impressive gardens. So it's very popular. The Palazzo Doria Pamphili is my favourite palazzo in Rome, and indeed it's got an extra tour now of the family's apartments, because it's quite interesting. They had an ancestor who was the victor of Lepanto in 1571, the battle against the Turks. And also they had a cardinal, Innocent X, immortalized by Velázquez in the famous painting, and Bellini in a brilliant bust. And the family has a collection of treasures. It's interesting under Italian law that if you take out a certain form of legal protection for your art collection, no member of a family is able to split it up. And that's one of the reasons they have such a gorgeous one.
Richard, I thought you were only able to eulogise so eloquently about the likes of Paris, Edinburgh and possibly Madrid, but clearly...
Oh, no, Rome is, it is extraordinary, because obviously there, with the traces of ancient Rome practically everywhere.
Just like Lincoln, really.
Well, it might very well be, but I mean, the new murals in the Church of Santa Maria Antica in the Forum, I hadn't actually, of all the years I've been visiting it, I hadn't actually seen a new excavation which tourists can use, and that is, it is fantastic, and I went in the Janiculum too, and that too is amazing. I would say one thing, and that is that if you want, which I did, spending 2.5 hours there, a glass of water anywhere in the Forum, I couldn't see a place to get one, and that can...
Bring your own. Bring a bottle. That's a clear thing.
I did take a bottle, but you need more than one, because it's a really hot day.
Oh, well.
Also, if you want to go to St. Peter's, here's the tip. I mean, the queues are just phenomenal throughout the day, but if you go at 6:15 in the evening, you can get in. You can almost walk in.
You can just after the Angelus. There we are. Say your prayers. Go to
Michelangelo's Pietà.
What? I was thinking more about the prayer that said at sort of 6 o'clock at that particular time, but let's move along that whole side to a movie that had its world premiere at the 2016 Sundance Film Festival, all about a father who raises his children in a remote visit in the Pacific Northwest.
Yes, Captain Fantastic, and I have to say that this, delighted to say, is a movie that people have been very fond of because it opened at Sundance and it started to get rave reviews, and people have been taking notice of something that it's well directed, it moves in a very, very pacey way, and Viggo Mortensen as the father, who brings up his family for a whole decade together with his wife, who's just died, in the woods. They learn the laws of nature, but they also learn about certain aspects of life. Ben Cash is a remarkable figure. He regards capitalist society as absolutely evil, and he's also, for the First Amendment, you can do this. You can technically, legally bring your family up like this. And with his six children, he has faces a crisis, because they may know a great deal about the lives they've been living, but they know nothing about the life beyond. And when his wife dies, she's bipolar, and it's been very difficult, his wife Leslie, they have to travel to her funeral. He's been banned by his conventional father-in-law, superbly played by Frank Langella, wonderful actor, obviously, remember Frost Nixon. You're not likely to deter a family like this. Now, it's a fascinating movie because it's so unconventional. Obviously, it's an ode to the independent-minded. But it's full of not only laughs, but also some parts are deeply moving. George Mackay, playing his eldest son, Bodovan, he knows certain things, but how do you actually propose to someone? What if you meet a girl and you like them, since he's no experience, what do you do? There are aspects of the way this unconventional upbringing, there are huge advantages but also disadvantages, and how does it pan out when they actually do get to a conventional funeral? I just leave you to imagine what could happen. No spoilers from me. Director Mac Ross keeps this movie moving along at a cracking pace. There is only one slightly unusual turn or twist in it, which is rather conveniently ironed out. I'll simply say no more, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and no wonder it's had such excellent reviews. Viggo Mortensen has always got the physicality and dynamism for this type of role, and he's excellent at it.
Heartwarming, according to Vanity Fair. Heartwarming.
It's got moving scenes, it's got funny scenes, and it revels in originality.
Sounds as though it's the ideal precursor to Hunt for the Wilder People. Or is it the Wilder People? Or are we Wilder Beasts?
It's interesting. Regarding the Wilder Beast, the film's title refers to the Wilder Beast and the ability of this animal to keep on the move. Mm. This is what the unlikely duo of Heck, played by that wonderful actor Sam Neill, who plays a curmudgeon with a heart, and also young Ricky Bader, played by Julian Dennison, actually do. Ricky is brought to a farm by social services officials in New Zealand. He's the problem child. His history of offences, we're shown them in flashback. And Bella, played by Rima Tibuyata, wanted to become a foster parent, and she is loving, but her husband, the gruff and surly Heck, is initially very resistant to having an addition to the family. But after Bella's sudden tragic death, Heck decides to take a trek into the wild to assuage his grief. He's warm to Ricky. Hears he's going to be taken back into care. No way. This is certainly two movies about tough individuals.
Don't forget his dog, Tupac.
There are two dogs. Both of them take their dog. And the dogs are, putting it mildly, very helpful because there's a major manhunt here. When Hector actually takes Ricky in defiance of the law, it's assumed that he's dangerous and he's abducted him. So it's basically Heck's knowledge of what he calls the knack, the wild, staying calm in adversity, and Ricky is intrepid and persevering. It's actually one of those wonderful movies because visually, too, this is very strong, wonderful scenes in New Zealand, the nature, the breathtaking spectacle of the wild. Very good performances.
It is directed by Kiwi writer-director Taika Waititi.
I was about to say so, and based on a novel by Barry Crump, and it's one of those, again, this is a heartwarming movie, it's full of charm, and it'll captivate audiences. It's wonderful to have to welcome two movies at the same time, not totally dissimilar, and it's a comedy drama, because bits of it are very, very funny. The trouble is when Heck fractures his foot, when you're being pursued by police, social services, etc., it's not an advantage. So it's young Ricky who really does keep things moving, and somehow they do keep moving until a very interesting denouement. No spoilers, of course, from me, but this is the movie again. It's partly funny, it's often very touching, and there's some quite dramatic scenes in it too.
And yet the Daily Telegraph says it's a movie that charms you silly, then loses its way.
I suppose you could certainly fault it climactically, yes, but you've had so much pleasure along the way that I wouldn't go out of my way to do other than praise it. And I think both movies, one compliments each other very well indeed.
It's only 101 minutes long, 1 hour 41 minutes, so don't
that
fret.
That can be an eternity if it's bad.
Oh, come now, Richard. Nobody sets out to make a bad movie, or do they?
A wide screen makes a bad film.
Oh, are you saying Ben-Hur would be better suited as a comedy? Maybe you should take it in that sense, not a
well,
comedy.
Well, yes, except I didn't expect it in that sense. Funny enough to be a good comedy.
Well, there you have it. Unfortunately, our New Zealand correspondent now back in the British Isles and back on the Midweek Drive, as heard last night, in fact, Jessica Ward, unable to actually wake up in time while she was working till early in the morning. So it's understandable. Young people these days, Richard, they don't have the ability. Otherwise, we could have had her views as a New Zealander commenting on a Kiwi writer-director, but we can't. So there you go. And
I think it's very interesting because New Zealand, of course, had with Middle Earth with Peter Jackson, and it's interesting also Australia and the numbers of top actors and directors from the Antipodes. It's an important contribution, and it's interesting to see a movie like this from New Zealand, and also the Captain Fantastics from Sundance and these independent movies. It's really, really important for cinema that we spread the word that they're worth seeing, and let's go to see them and enjoy them.
Or else see them on Netflix. I'm sorry, Richard, I couldn't resist it.
I knew
you would immediately sort of jump on me from that particular thing. But I believe that we're seriously looking at the next set of Academy Awards at movies being up for awards which have just been released on Netflix. Interesting.
I think things are changing, and I can't dispute it. If you look at the way movies, for example, opening in London now, sometimes new movies are opening at the Picture House Central or Curzon Soho before they have been finally seen by the national press show, by the critics and so on. That changes are afoot. When we're talking about Netflix, and Netflix is, I know, extremely influential with House of Cards, and of course it tried to open and failed, Beast of No Nation in the United States. There was a boycott. But we must be very careful to keep the mirror, keep that period where we can actually enjoy the widescreen experience for a certain period of time, but I do accept, looking ahead, things are, you know, they do change, but important the widescreen experience remains to us for as many people as possible. And one danger with low budget movies, people aren't going to go, I think, to the cinemas, despite the fact the cinemas have got part restaurants, part cafes, everything you can think of, part sort of social.
Almost like the entertainment dream theatres that they were set up as being 100 or so years ago. It's amazing.
Well, that's an interesting comparison, but 100 or so years ago, in the days of D.W. Griffiths and so forth, they didn't have any competition. And, of course, television.
They had the music hall, Richard. They had the music hall and Variety.
Yes, but where else to go but the palaces of the dream palaces? But the other thing, of course, was that Hollywood, as you know, had a monopoly, and monopolies are not very healthy. In fact, it was left to Olivia de Havilland to break it was a form of slavery, the contracts that actors actually were held under by studios. Betty Davis tried and failed, and the Havilland law is one of, you know,
enshrined. And let's not go into Charlie Chaplin and other fine folk who set up United Artists. Hunt for the Wilder People, or is it Wilder People? Always confusing that, but let's say Wilder People. And Captain Fantastic, two solid thumbs up from Richard Fitzwilliams this week, as indeed was the City of Rome in terms of...
Oh, the City of Rome is truly fantastic, and I didn't mention the Capitol too, because I played two visits to the various museums there. I mean, from Michelangelo's masterpiece, but if you want to see the dying Gaul and the boy with the thorn and also the symbol of Rome, the she-wolf, I mean, there's wonderful sculptures and very... Romulus and Remus, and it really is interesting because you also see the equestrian sculpture, the statue of Marcus Aurelius. He looks very like Alec Guinness in The Fall of the Roman Empire.
He was probably just doing his meditations at the time. And let's face it, without Marcus Aurelius, how would we Stoics exist?
And I was rather disappointed, by the way, that I wouldn't describe myself as a Stoic. But
you're not. Are you more of an Epicurean? Don't tell me you're simply a hedonist, for goodness sake, Richard.
Hedonist, definitely, definitely.
Oh, my word.
When I can be. But Marcus Aurelius, you'll recall, was murdered by Mel Ferrer's Creon in the fall of the Roman Empire with poisoned apple, and in Gladiator, Joaquin Phoenix playing Commodus strangled him. I was very disappointed recently to discover that he died of plague when on campaign.
But he died stoically. That's the important thing. He died
that
stoically.
That is indeed, but his statue remains, and together with one equestrian statue, which is very, very impressive, in Venice, I've never seen anything quite like this. And it's interesting that over all these years, and we're thinking with Marcus Aurelius, back to early Roman Empire, about 180, it's only recently that they've taken the statue down, because it was, after all, getting somewhat decayed, and you'll see the original statue in the Capitol Museums, and they have put a duplicate out, and it looks very well indeed, but it's interesting it's lasted that long, and with all the changes in Rome's amazing history, down the centuries, it's an important link.
Have you had a recently interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Richard Fitzwilliams?
I certainly have.
Are you back again with us next week?
Yes, the Magnificent Seven must be seen.
And we may well have a magnificent group of midweek drivettes as well for you. But who knows?
Being beat up and battered around, being sent up.
Travelling Wilburys, Handle Me With Care. Siren FM, Lincoln First Community Radio Station, or indeed Lincoln's First Community Radio Station. And it's just coming around to 25 minutes to 9 o'clock in Lincoln. Is that the same time in Newcastle on Tyne, Arthur?
Absolutely spot on.
Amazing. Who would have thought? You know, two cities separated by 200 English miles, and we share the same time zone. Sometimes the whole life experience just astounds me. So, moving on, clearly Newcastle United got back to winning ways, and it was very symmetrical, wasn't it, really? A 2-0 defeat against Wolves, a 2-0 win against Wolves.
Yeah, it did very well. I thought the second goal was a cracker.
Well, there we are. And so, clearly, our mutual colleague and friend Ian Lennox will be quite happy that they got back to winning.
Oh, he'll be delirious.
And let's hope he can add a few more words to his latest epic, because after a wee while when he thought, oh, I'm not going to write anything, he felt moved, Arthur, as you know, to sort of work through the whole thing. And he's, I think the last time we spoke, he'd already got 10,000 words written. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's a solitary thing to do, writing books. The thing about Ian is he's very, very good on research, and he gets steeped in his research, and I just wish I could do that.
Oh, Arthur, you have people to do the research for you. It's a different line entirely. Different league. You know, that's the classic line. A bit like David Starkey, who's actually to be found at Lincoln Drill Hall this coming Sunday, the 25th of September, at 7:30 p.m. With Overmighty Father Confessors, Concealed Death, and Lethal Faction Fights Over the Still Warm Corpse. The Tudors died as excitingly as they lived. Now, that's a little line to work through.
There's a man who speaks his mind.
Indeed. The lecture that David Starkey is providing uncovers the astonishingly dramatic story, and there are a few more stimulating thinkers, according to the John Wenham Events Diary, than Dr. Starkey, and few who understand better the way the most powerful have thought throughout our history. Approximately 60 minutes, and ticket £16. That's at the Lincoln Drill Hall, Sunday the 25th of September. David Starkey, the King, is dead.
That's some promo you've just given him.
Do you think so? Yes. I always like to ensure that, because John works so hard at putting these things together. I feel if they're not sold to the listener properly, you know, you've got to kind of really psych oneself up. I've actually been working on that for the last 4.5 hours, just actually getting myself into the right zone. So. Meanwhile, as we continue ever onwards, how is your, I mean, you've said obviously in terms of research and so on, but any sort of stages that you, I mean, let's look at the Arthur Mackenzie classics, because surely the world is awaiting a kind of compilation of some of your greats, your stage plays, the people in the gymnasium, the whole range of things. You know, we surely need to have a kind of an Arthur almanac.
That's a good idea. But I can't do it.
You just compile the material together and work through it. The magic will happen.
Strangely enough, I don't respectfully look at my work. I try to think ahead, you know, because that's set in stone anyhow. It's gone. If anybody picks it up, well, fair enough. But it's the new ideas I'm looking for all the time.
Do you ever get tempted to revisit, though?
No.
No, all right. So the classic episodes of The Bill or Wycliffe, you don't think?
No, I've got DVDs coming over years of my work, and never, ever look at it, ever.
Well, there
In fact, when it's on the screen, I very rarely watched it initially anyhow. The thrill for me is actually writing it, struggling with a subject matter, with a dialogue, getting it shaped together, and then handing it on. It's a bit like, you know, you take a child up to the age of 5 or 3 or 4, whatever it is, hand it on to the creche, hand it on to school, and just hope that they'll do a good job with them.
And would that many other authors would be so forgiving in releasing of their work, but...
Well, I don't sit on words like a hen on eggs. It's pointless. Once you've handed that over, and once the actor and the directors and whoever it is put it together, that's it. There's nothing you can do about it. The only way you can do something about it is if it's a stage play. And which I prefer, actually. I prefer writing for the stage because you can change it every night. You'll have heard everybody say the same thing. But every night, you could, if you wanted to watch it every night, you could actually change it. You'd think, that's not working, that's working. I can change that, I can improve that. And so that's the process I really prefer.
They do say the nights are drawing in, but as far as the University of Lincoln is concerned, it's lights nights. Did you see what we did there, Arthur? I need to sort of work our way through that to another segue to a week on Friday, Friday the 30th of September, from 11 a.m. until 10 p.m. It'll be Lights Nights, which actually is an acronym standing for Lincoln Get Hold of Tech and Science.
Is it now?
Yeah. It's a bit of a... I mean, I prefer ostrich, outrageous suggestions taken readily in courageous hands, but...
Yeah.
Lincoln Get Hold of Tech and Science, Lights Nights, a celebration of how science and technology impacts on our daily lives. It's probably what the city actually needs.
It's taking over, isn't it? Okay. Technology is taking over.
You've got your smartphones, you've got your thick phones, you've got your, oh, I don't know, you've got your not so smart phones, you've got your middling phones. Actually, maybe we should actually have a thick phone.
Does anybody have a telephone?
It's a brick, exactly. Very important. Anyway, if you are interested in Lights Nights, with a lively and thought-provoking free programme, I'll say that again, free programme of events and venues across the City of Lincoln, the day aims to excite and inspire visitors with wonders of innovation and exploration. Lights is actually part of the European Researchers Night, which is a Europe-wide initiative which takes place on the last Friday of September every year and attracts over 1 million people every year as well, Arthur. I mean, I would have thought that you've got a fabulous life centre, I believe, in Newcastle.
Yeah, the same amount of people that didn't want to go to the war in Iraq. 1 million people.
Yeah. It's all balance, you see.
Yes,
Professor Carenza Lewis, who is responsible, actually, at the University of Lincoln for public engagement with science and research and so on. And, of course, Carenza, one of the Time Team specialists from Times Past. She'll be joining us later on to have a chat about Lights Nights and various other factors that she's involved with. So there we are. You've got your David Starkey, you've got your Lights Nights, you've got... It's just... I mean, the East Midlands just blossoms.
This is weird.
Yeah, but Arthur, we know that every so often taking that leap out of the comfort zone can actually make for inspiration.
That's important. Yes, I totally
inspiration.
I totally agree. It can terrify you as well.
And the very thought that we actually have you, Arthur McKenzie, as our official music critic in the absence of Ian Lennox, actually even Ian Lennox as a music critic is quite a step to actually leap for, is just part of that whole belief that we can take things further forward. Yeah, exactly. So Ashton Shepherd, her praises were being sung loud and proud by Camo from Nashville last night. But as we always say, it's all very well on the Wednesday evening when people are kind of full of the midweek over the hump day scenario. But what about the Thursday morning? So Arthur, are you ready for Ashton Shepherd?
Certainly, I'll let a coin float.
Yeah, and don't wake me up. Which a harsh critic would say, I've already gone to sleep. But maybe Arthur isn't that harsh critic. Ashton Shepherd, don't wake me up.
Well, some interesting phrasing, but bit of a squawk and a dirge as far as I was concerned.
Yeah, fair comment.
I prefer the Wilburys.
Yeah, well, there we are, you see. It's a nice sort of line. And clearly, Ashton would probably not be using that on her latest album. Arthur McKenzie, I preferred the Wilburys. Although, in an ironic sense, it could have an appealing side of things. I'm sure there'll be more goodies to sort of come. Maybe it's a mood thing. Like so many sort of musical mood things, if you're in the right mood, that's the important thing.
It could put you in the wrong mood as well, couldn't it?
Yeah, this is true. Margaret from The Apprentice, you may well recall that programme. It featured, yes, exactly. And anyway, she's joining us on the second part of the programme to actually talk about the importance of the lunch break, because apparently in Britain, as we said earlier, we don't have them. Or if we have them, we have them as sort of lunch 15 minutes or lunch 20 minutes.
It's on the march, yeah.
And there is a campaign that's just been set up, which Margaret is leading and taking full centre stage on, which suggests that actually companies and people are much happier, better, more productive, and so on, if you take a full hour break from your work.
I totally agree. The trouble is that the pace of life is now, you know, people are eating, they're coming out of a shop eating sandwiches. I mean, it's ridiculous, drinking pots of coffee. You see everybody carrying coffee everywhere. No, I think everybody should be sit down an hour, relax, let their mind unwind, and let the blood go to their stomach, you know what I mean? Very interesting, very interesting.
Would you advocate going down the Spanish line of the siesta?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. In fact, most days I do have a snooze after my lunch.
That's the athlete in you, Arthur.
Well, it's the age in me.
Well, possibly both.
Bit of both. No, but even, yes, as an athlete, that was very very important. When I was completing that at the top level, I would ensure that every day that when I could, I would have an hour, maybe even up to 2 hours sleep in the afternoons.
Yeah. Well, it's time to actually reset. I mean, as we say, it's rebooting the system. I mean, sometimes the classic IT line, have you tried switching it off and switching it on again? It works wonders.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, this is, I mean, an astounding sort of connection. I mean, normally, Arthur, as you know, we have correspondents who are working through that. I think, actually, the notion that one of our midweek drivettes, Tessa Snart, has actually been celebrating her birthday. Well, obviously, children these days, they have to celebrate it over 2 or 3 days. It's like the Queen, it's royalty. It happens, but hopefully they will be back with us in force next week. Will you, Arthur McKenzie, be kind enough to rejoin us on the production? No
good,
problem. Because I think it's also the return of Ian Lennox next week. So the idea would be,
You
see, it would be Ian back to his pre-9 o'clock slot, yourself back in the post-9
o'clock. Barry's charged Lennox.
Yeah, well, this is true. Currently, the person who's occupying your 9:40 slot, Arthur, is a certain television director called Graham Harper.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
It would be good to catch up with Graham. It's been too long.
Well, I shall. I mean, obviously, he might be listening to this. It's unlikely because Graham is not an early riser. I mean, there we are. Last Saturday, we were reporting on the Harrogate's Flower Show. When I suggested we should rendezvous at 8 o'clock, I think. Unless he's actually working as a director, in which case 5 o'clock is perfectly okay. They just step away. Anyway, he did some sensational work. You can see the photos on Facebook and indeed listen to Graham and Bernadette talking about the Harrogate Autumn Flower Show and, of course, his latest opus, which is Inside Number 9. So, and not that he can speak about this, but whole being well, I think he might be hopefully directing the long-awaited movie in the not-too-distant future. I'll say no more.
Well, that's good.
It is.
Good,
the fact that he should have actually commissioned Your Good Self to write it is another line entirely, but we'll get something sorted out on that. So, Arthur, you will return, which is great stuff from that perspective, in the second hour of the programme, as well as Margaret, formerly from The Apprentice, and hopefully William Sitwell, who should be joining us. We've also got Simon Coates, who's based in Saltburn, I believe, or Redcar, or one of those two areas a little bit further south than you are, Arthur.
Yes.
On the coast.
We don't talk about that.
Well, exactly. But he's an author and writer, and he'll be sharing with us some of his thoughts and views and so on and so forth, plus maybe some exciting news that he might have to put together as well from the whole thing. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren FM, Lincoln's first community radio station. And do you know, Arthur, it's now coming around to 9 minutes to 9 o'clock. In Lincoln, England, and I presume it's the same time.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
that's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, quite literally. I mean, if we were precise, we'd say it's 8:50 and 50 seconds. But you know, that's already gone now. So yeah, 9 minutes to go. Arthur McKenzie, we salute you. Gordon Lightfoot, float your boat.
Yes, like them.
The early morning rain with a dawn.